welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
Folks, welcome back. And it is now or never. It is Feedback Friday. And I'm not going to... I know every once in a while, and usually on Feedback Friday, I'll dive into why it's now or never. There's there's plenty of things to cover. There's plenty of things to talk about. And I think one of the things that I hear taking up, it's trending, if you want to call it that, in the news cycle. And it's kind of a sub-context or some sub-topic to the education system and to, you know, I talk a lot about the history of enlightenment in America and how enlightenment does not allow, I mean, enlightenment is based upon discipline, folks. You cannot, you know, move forward and become a better society without discipline. And so, when we look at everything that's going on, it is almost like a Chinese fire drill. There are so many characters that are out of the car running around, out of the insane asylum, that are running around creating chaos in so many different ways. And one of the ways is this whole concept of libraries. Now, see, what is a library? A library is not a private institution. A library is where the taxpayers come together and they create a resource, a local resource of material that becomes available for the, you know, people of a very specific purpose. Now, we realize that there are school libraries and then there's public libraries, but there's not a library out there that's, I can't say that there's not one. There are not very many libraries out there that are privately funded. And so we do have private funding, kind of, but it's subsidized by the government with the, you know, the presidential libraries. There are philanthropists that, you know, have their own libraries. Now, what should we do with our government libraries? Are our government libraries to be the repository of filth? Are our government libraries to be a repository of lies? Are our government libraries, what is it that we want our government libraries to provide the inquiring mind? Now, when you go to the news, in the past, the news was really more objective, you know, a long, 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 long time ago, in a completely different world. the news was something that was very objective, and it was, you know, not leading you into conclusions. What we now have is we have manipulation, and we have, I'll just say, subjective journalism, because it is being driven by the biases of the individual. Now, granted, we all have individual biases. And, you know, I have met even conservatives that, you know, because, let me finish my thought. I have met even conservative journalists who have their bias, and their bias is equally political. In other words, their bias is towards a conservative but not constitutional framework or paradigm. And so the real problem is that we've allowed ourselves to be diametrically opposed, or we've created these two opposing concepts of conservative controls and liberal controls instead of constitutional and getting everything back into that context. So when we look at libraries, when we look at the funding for libraries, the taxpayers absolutely should have something to say. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to venture to say, folks, that you have libraries because government has just assumed that you need to have them. And that they thought that those things were, a great vestige for information. Ah, but what kind of information should it be providing? And the fact is that if you have not delegated that authority to your state, if you've not delegated that authority to your county, if you've not delegated that authority to your city in those very specific charters, or if you've granted them general powers, you need to amend your constitutions. And you need to lock down what your libraries are to possess. Now, let's be clear here. Censorship is the eradication of information from society, right? Censorship says that you can't have that. Now, when you create a library, the funding should dictate what it's supposed to have. Now, if you have, let's just go into a school of sciences where, you got from combustion engines, physics, a real variety for, the mechanics working on cars, the mechanical, side of engineering for cars, car development and innovation. And then you also have the physics, you have, all the sciences, biology, chemistry, and so forth. Then if you have a school and the state has created this scientific school, then the focus of the library should be to serve that school. That library shouldn't have any social engineering, any fiction, any fantasy type of material, because the whole purpose and the funding is to support the education, a very specific education. Now, when we look at our high schools, when we look at our junior high and our our elementary school libraries, because this is where we're really into this, I'll just say deep water, folks. The problem is that the parents have very specific rights. And parents, and actually, every state has laws that keeps any form of erotic material. I know the state of Washington has this, and as a blue state, it's the law of the state. In other words, if a library has smut, if it has erotic material, pornography, then they are violating the law. And whoever the proprietor is, and you could do all the investigations to find out who bought it, who brought it in, and that person should be charged of bringing in material that is exposing a child. And so, folks, first off, you have a law in your state. And if you don't have a law in your state, you have to say, well, why don't we have that law? What happened to it? Because as far as I know, every state in the United States in 1960 had laws on the books against sodomy. So let's take this one step further. Did those laws get rescinded? Did the sodomy laws get removed, or are they being ignored? And so, excuse me, there's all sorts of material, and it's not about, there's nobody going out and burning the plates and burning books. There's none of that going on here. But the leftists are screaming because they have gotten into your life. They've squeezed their way. It's like the camel. They've gotten their nose and body into the tent. And now you're trying to get rid of them. And now they're actually screaming because now you found out that they've been using all of these resources, the library, the curriculum, and everything else to feed your children a propaganda that all began with a government violation of the Constitution. Folks, go back to 1920s. And go back and look at the ramifications of the Scopes trial. The Scopes trial is a trial that basically argued that we evolved from apes, that evolution was the scientific explanation for the existence of life on this planet. And the federal court system ruled in favor that that was the truth, and actually it incrementally took further and further steps to root out creationism as an argument in your education system. So over the years, and a long time ago, I was telling people that if you have your family going to Sunday school, then you have a remote chance of teaching your children to, you know, be godly and honest and chaste and, you know, a good person in the eyes of Christ. However, the reality is that it's a remote chance. That's only because the 1 or 2 hours, or even if it was 8 hours on Sunday, that you had your children exposed to learning and reading and, you know, talking and all of that regarding the stories, the scriptures, the words themselves, the content of these words, 8 hours, it still pales in comparison to what your children are exposed to at the, you see, you have the Sunday school. The parents take their children and family, and we go to Sunday school to learn about righteousness. Then you release your children to the state, who then indoctrinates them in the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday school of all things godless, evil, and debauchery. And it didn't happen that way in the 1930s. It was incremental. And they knew that they had to incrementally expand their reach and their repulsive curriculum to get, you know, more radical. I mean, we're at the throes of, they're basically bragging, folks, that there's nothing you can do. And I say they're wrong. I say that you, as a citizen, can start using First Amendment petitions. I say that you, as a citizen, can actually start fighting all of this stuff back, because bottom line, we institute government, and everything the government does, if it has not been authorized by us, if we did not delegate that power, then you can have the ability to shut down that library, because if it's not constitutional, if it's not within the framework. Now, school libraries is something different, because when you gave them this general power to operate schools, and see, this is where the brilliance comes in looking at the United States Constitution, that if you enumerate very specific things, that if you're going to have a library, it must do this, 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 and this, and it cannot include these things. This way, you have full control over what government can do in the education system, instead of just saying, yeah, you can educate our kids. You made the mistake. We made the mistake of allowing in our states this carte blanche general power. But let's focus, put the school aside, let's focus real quick on public libraries. Did you delegate this general power to the federal, to the state government, to your counties and so forth? Did you delegate them the authority to have these libraries? Then now you have a leg to stand on. And as a matter of fact, you can basically, you know, amend your constitution to basically ensuring that the library is not there to support your very specific type of content. Now, the fact is that public library is funded by the taxpayers. And understanding the principles of a republican form of government, the county can actually, you know, deviate from the states. If you do your own constitutions at the county level and you take away those state powers. See, this is where I think the progressives would, you know, we want to have our own perversions over here. And we have a right to have that because we're a perverse group. They may have a little bit of a leg to stand on. However, to actually create, because this is where the red counties actually have that level of control, or the majority of counties do control. It's called our Republican form of government and how we invoke our democracy, that the counties have equal say. And this is where looking at amending your state constitution to framing, you know, public libraries to contain very specific stuff. I mean, it's nice. It is nice that, you know, they have all of this fantasy and all of this creativity, arts, and so forth. However, you'll realize that the federal government, even in the Constitution, doesn't have the authority to actually have art or supporting those things like PBS, NPR, all of those types of propaganda media that the federal government has been funding. They don't have the authority to do that. Shut them down. Shut them down. Shut down that funding and shut down that pipeline of how things are coming down via NPR, PBS, and these art galleries, you know, the Smithsonian and those types of things. They don't have the authority to do those. And so technically, either you'll allow your state to do it, and buyer beware. If you allow them to do it, you better contain them to very specific stuff, because the devil, Satan, is going to scream for you to be tolerant for you know, his artwork of elephant dung on the Virgin Mary, because that's what he does. He pushes the boundaries and he insults you, and over time we just become tolerant to the insults and the sufferings that he wants to put us through. We don't have to do that. We can be an enlightened society, and we can acknowledge that all sorts of perverse things will exist if we allow them to. But if we allow ourselves to be disciplined and focused on being, you know, a happy, productive society instead of a destructive society. Because bottom line, people that are consumed with addictions, whether it be pornography or whether it be drugs, whether it be gambling or whether it be gaming, it doesn't matter. We have focused or shifted our focus towards things that make us feel good and things that elevate our, you know, these levels of dopamine and those things that make us feel happy. In other words, we're chasing our carnal senses instead of actually disciplining ourselves and actually doing things that are best for us. Ways we can change these things is by removing those protections of the consequences of sin. Now, this is a little deep, but when we look at these health clinics, when we look at, you know, insurance programs, as a matter of fact, car insurance and motorcycle insurance, why is it that the state has a law that says you have to wear a helmet? Because as far as I'm concerned, that is a revenue law. Because if you actually drive your motorcycle without a helmet and they can cite you, they make money off of that. Oh, they say that it's for, you know, purposes that are, you know, noble so that you will protect yourself. Get rid of those laws and change your law model to basically state that if you are in an accident on a motorcycle and you were not wearing a helmet, then you, your survivors, and everybody else are not entitled to making a claim to the damages done by your decision not to wear the appropriate safety that the, you know, the state has recommended and that the manufacturers has provided, like in a car that have seatbelts. Let people drive without seatbelts. They have an accident. Any injury they sustain, they have to pay for. And the healthcare insurance company will not pay for it, because if you got that injury in a car accident and you didn't have insurance and you didn't use the seatbelt, then the cost is on you. Change our society to share, or actually ensure, that the individual carries the burden of the cost of their decision. In other words, you did it. You go get a venereal disease, then you have to find a way to pay for that. You have to find a way to figure out how to fight that. We should not be spending money on getting rid of venereal disease. I'm sorry. Folks, if venereal disease was a real problem, and it is, and it has been, and it was one of the best motivators in keeping people from succumbing to those temptations of extramarital affairs and fornication. Boom. I mean, there's consequences. If you're going to go do that, that's going to happen. And today, we've been spending trillions of dollars in removing the consequences of sin. Now, in some ways, the government's been making money off of some of this stuff. And that's just, that's abominable. It's wrong. But the fact is, when we start looking at the argument of censorship, this is Satan basically trying to keep his wedge in our society so that we do not become enlightened, so that we can't, we constrain ourselves from actually creating disciplines. And I'm here to tell you, folks, I'm here to tell you that you have the power and authority to actually regulate your libraries. If somebody wants that smut, then they have to go. And you can even make it so that that type of stuff isn't available on the internet for anybody that's inappropriate. We actually can put age controls. We already have those types of things available. We actually can clean up the internet by removing all pornography. Anything that contains pornography has to have a .xxx instead of a .com. Twitter.com, they would have to get rid of their pornography, or they would have to become Twitter.xxx. And then all you need to do is, at the state level, just say no XXX material here. We don't want our state to be submitted to the slime and filth. Oh, but we, you know, people have the right to, you know, have access. Well, yeah, if you want to go somewhere else, go to Amsterdam. You know, everything's, you know, drugs. It's all available there. Ah, but we want to make our town an Amsterdam. No, I'm sorry. This is a constitutional republic, a land of laws. And the law is king. And the laws is, you know, how we basically create discipline for ourselves to make a better nation. This is how America became so great. And the amazing thing is that even still today, there are still people that are within these disciplined paradigms. The problem is that they're becoming, the debauchery and the debasing of our society is becoming so destructive that we've been, you know, I just hate to say it, but the sin industry, the industry of sin, is the dominating industry of our economy. When you look at how much money is in alcohol and alcoholic beverages, tobacco, and, you know, gambling, and so forth and so on, and some of these things are intertwined. So, I mean, they're just integrated in all of this. And I'm going, wow, what percentage of our GDP is based on sin or bad immoral behavior? This is why government has been spending, you know, at breakneck speed, programs and instituting policies like, you know, national health care, all unconstitutional, folks, all unconstitutional. You want to change things? You want to take control? The only way to do this is by submitting petitions and demanding compliance. You start getting compliance to the Constitution in your county and in your state, you're going to get rid of this crap. And it's not like we're censoring. It's not like we're actually going out and erasing and burning stuff. It just won't be for public use. We'll be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so placing the clear context to this whole argument of you're censoring. Actually, no, you're not. It's not appropriate for it to be available here. In some ways, you can actually control that. So if somebody wants to receive that smut and they find it online, then, you know, or if you actually do what you can do to shut this all down, you call it a blue state, right? I mean, states actually still have laws that you can't buy alcohol, you know, on Sunday. I think Utah still has that law. There are still blue laws on the books. Now, how are those blue laws not being challenged as unconstitutional? Because the people, you know, either amended the Constitution or the people invoked those types of laws to create some level of protection. And so for some very specific purpose, like honoring the Sabbath day, to keeping people from being able to, you know, get all drunk and disorderly on the Sabbath. Anyway, folks, you have the power to do these things. It's about getting organized. And as a matter of fact, my recommendation isn't, you know, to try to create a group, to create a Puritanistic society. My recommendation is to get government out of the business of subsidizing and supporting these things. Then let's see what next step we need to take. The whole point isn't to actually create blue laws. It's to get government out of spending a penny on taking care of somebody's venereal diseases. Because they chose to actually, you know, that's not an act that, you know, well, now it's one thing if you were raped, then I think the state, you know, can provide that type of assistance. But the individual that did that person's committed a crime. Not only did they rape that person, but they should be held accountable for infecting them as well. Remember, if we actually start assigning the fiscal responsibility to the damages that they do, then now it even becomes more onerous. And now we're placing full context onto what these people are doing. I'll give you another example. When you have, you know, Al Sharpton and company walk out onto a freeway to block traffic, then every car that got stopped and was held up, you know, on that road should have a right to sue Al Sharpton and whoever else was organized and whoever else participated in, you know, this civil disobedience. They should have to pay. They violated your right of commerce. You violated your right of a through fare. You had a right to be able to get from point A to point B. That road was built to be able to do that. And so they did it. There must be consequences to it. When we start creating consequences for your behavior, I mean real consequences, and I'll give you another great personal property consequence before I get into really, you know, some of the stuff I was going to talk about. These topics can take a while for me to kind of get around. But one other thing that we really need to get our arms around is eminent domain and private property. Now, private property, the way they've basically done it, they've made it as cheap as possible that the state can say, well, we compensated you. But actually, the Constitution says just compensation. And I believe that if the state or any government comes along and they say, we need to take your property, then I believe that that person should be able to call forth a common law jury or common law court or a common law grand jury and state their case of what just compensation would be. You know, just compensation isn't just paying for the property. It's paying for the move. It's paying for, you know, all damages, all things that are gone. You know, everything that you did, you had a well on that property, or maybe you put, you know, a little garden there. All of the stuff that you did in improving that property and making it yours and making that property, you know, more to you, that all goes into just compensation. And so when they come along and they just say, well, all the houses in that area are worth that much, that's what we're going to give you. Oh, no. That's not just. That's almost like saying, well, we're forcing you to sell and, you know, you're going to sell it for what the comp rate is. No, you're forcing me to move and I have a right of just compensation. Folks, this is something that has been completely lost, and we all cannot, because even if it only happens to a minority, we have been sleeping and allowing, you know, the downtrodden to really be, you know, oppressed. We have ways of doing this, and the ways of doing this is through petitions in ensuring that every facet of the law, and in this particular case, the just compensation facet, needs to be complied with. And how to do that? So this is where we inject a common law court that will dictate what that compensation is. The government should not be able to tell you what is just. You should be able to make, and they should be able to make, because their only claim is that they need it for this purpose. That's it. Then they have to pay you what you can make an argument for in a common law court to say, I believe that it is only just that they pay for this, 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 and this, and let the jury decide. And in so doing, now they just can't, you know, they'll have to really think how they can expand infrastructure without displacing people, how they can be effective in doing these things. Because sometimes, folks, it's a matter of going up. It's not necessarily just running your, you know, running your highway along the, you know, along the earth, you know, put up a highway, but an elevated highway, or do something else. Bottom line, there you need to really plan out the cost of doing those types of things. Because bottom line, people should be able to hold these types of activities hostage, because nobody wants to be displaced because of progress. Everybody should have, and they should feel fairly compensated. That actually has to add to, you know, the cost of doing business, bottom line, because every person has a castle and they have a right to make a full claim of compensation for every part of that castle and their property. So anyway, what I really wanted to do was I really wanted to dive into censorship, truth, discipline, and enlightenment as this kind of opening dialogue. But what I really wanted to also talk about is the danger of elevating lies and deceit. And what do I mean by that? By actually giving credence to, you know, people, because what are these books that are, you know, talking about, you know, transgender and so forth? Are these scientific books that are speaking of fact, or are these books designed to manipulate kids into, you know, thinking more and focusing them on sexual things? And the fact is, should that be a part of an institution, a library that is there for a very specific purpose? If the root of this is to try to give a child information that is actually against the law of the land, it's erotic, or it is of a sexual nature, then it cannot be in that library. That's the law. We have laws, and this is how we've actually done this. The reason why NC-17 exists is because we have standards, and the parents have the ultimate say. Now, if there's a parent that wants to actually submit, you know, their children to these types of things, that actually goes down the path of child abuse. We want to be very clear here, folks. We have laws that protect you from these types of things. And the fact is that because the education says this is under the umbrella of education, education cannot trump the criminal law. There is no law that says education trumps, you know, crimes. These are crimes, period. And they're confessing to these crimes. Let's be clear here. Hold them accountable. The whole secret to, you know, to creating an enlightenment in society is holding people accountable. So, as you know, we're doing in the content on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we're covering the South Carolina debates. And as you know, on Monday, I'm doing this special presidential election episodes. And so there's lots of things we're going to be covering. And this Monday, I want to actually get into some of the tactical things that are currently happening in the campaign race. But I think it's really more important to lay out the doctrine of a campaign plan, of what are the critical things that have to be put out there so that people understand, you know, what has to change and what I would be willing to do if I was the president. Now, to be very clear here, folks, any person that goes down this path, not only will get resistance from the bureaucracy, they would be threatened. I'm just to tell you that these people that are entrenched, these communists that are entrenched in the system, entrenched within the bureaucracy, there would be all sorts of attempts on whosoever life that is trying to actually get rid of them. In other words, rooting them out. So there is this huge threat, because you got to remember, these people believe that the ends justify the means, which means that they're okay with committing the one of the most egregious sins possible, murder, in obtaining their goals. The ends justify the means. So just to be clear, these are very bold positions that we're creating and giving you on Mondays. And so if you have not heard them, you need to download my first one and my second one. We've only done two so far, and this coming Monday, we'll be doing the third one. And we're going to be getting deep into the national defense. We're going to get it deep into the military and reorganizing the military, because that's what's coming up. And then we're also going to get into foreign affairs. We're going to get into, you know, commerce, trade, and all of those types of things. Because what we need to do is we need to get our governments back into the framework. Because you know what? Your states are being stifled. The state you live in is being stifled in so many ways because of the government bureaucracy, the regulations that they've created in keeping your state from being able to produce goods, be able to mine materials, be able to harvest trees, all of these things. have been basically levied upon you and keeping you from being able to be as productive for your own benefit. Now, the state has the responsibility of making sure that it's renewing or maximizing what it's doing. So this is why, you know, I've said this before. You know, as we start going down this path, I think people really need to take a big bite out of this I'll call it the bread of honesty, because we all need to start, you know, chewing on this and digesting this to understand that the state does need very specific powers, but the county needs the most of the remainder, the residual powers, and that needs to be very clearly articulated in your state constitutions. So, in other words, you want to make sure that the state has the ability to do everything you need it to do for your counties. In other words, you need to kind of look at your counties as states within your state, because that's what they are. They are states within, they have their own courts. They have their own, you know, judge. They may even have their own little local laws. And understanding these and placing context of these will help you actually move forward in organizing your state constitution and your state government to where you can create a much more harmonious relationship throughout the states between the counties and so forth. Anyway, so we really need to, you know, kind of keep this honesty factor, because there are things that need to be surrendered, and there are things that the state needs to be able to do to protect the state and you from hostile intruders, whether that's Bill Gates coming and buying up a bunch of land, or some other opulent, you know, person that has more money than, you know, than maybe they should have. I'm not here to say how much money anybody should have, but if they're willing to use money in a context of warfare or to obtain control, then we've got to call these people out for what they are. They're evil. Anybody that wants to submit or enslave others to what they want, like Soros, like Gates, all of these people, they're evil. And we need to empower the states to be able to and ensure that you are protected and the state is protected from this type of behavior. These are things that the framers couldn't even fathom. So we do have a new bold frontier that we're dealing with, and the threats aren't just people that look different. It's not that easy anymore. It's not people that dress differently or have different cultures. The threat is because we want you to place context to these things, because as we get our arms around this, I think we'll all be able to say, you know what? We need to have these types of limitations, property rights, those types of things. How much property should a person have? Do we really want to go down that path? Because bottom line, when somebody has, because it's power, property is power, money is power. You can't say otherwise. And, you know, so there's something to be learned and garnered from, you know, these communist arguments of talking about how these things, they're using these things to abuse us. But we need to look at these things and understand that we have to have a responsibility in making sure that everybody is protected, that government does not have the power to, you know, to harm the individual and their property, but they should have the power to be able to protect others from harming you as well. So anyway, let me just kind of dive into some of the stuff that I usually cover, because I want to do this. We're getting closer. We're a month away from FedNow, sometime in a month or more. FedNow, I don't know the exact day. It's probably out there, but I just know it's coming. July is coming. Whether you got some plans in stopping the calendar so that we don't make it to July, you know, I'm not aware of it, but do share if you've got some real evidence that you can do this. But it's coming. And so one of the things, gold was 1814 on March 7th. And since last week, it's creeped up a little bit to 1961. It was up to like 2100, 2200. So it's come down. and it's vacillating right now in a lower state than it was at its high. So in other words, those people who went out and bought their gold, and as a matter of fact, let me take a quick second here, because now's the time where I can cover this, that if you're buying gold, don't buy it to possess it. In other words, I said that absolutely wrong. Don't buy it for the institution to save it for you. Because when you allow the institution to save it for you, you're only paying them to keep it. Now, to be clear, I understand that there are some risks for somebody to actually have, you know, 100 coins, 100 ounces of gold in their hands. That's like $250,000. Sorry, I had to take a little swig. Anyway, that's $250,000. And it could be even more than that. And, so 100 ounces can add up pretty quick. And so there's a lot of people that just say, I'll safely hold that. When somebody could come and, you know, do a robbery, or, you know, overpower me, because when they know that there's that much, you know, in my holdings. Now, folks, you need to have something. You need to possess this. And I would not recommend, there are IRAs out there, so I would not recommend Monex to be your holder of gold. I would not recommend Monex to be your holder of silver. If you're going to go to Monex, go to them to possess it. I've never had a problem, and I've had a good, listener, a friend, colleague, contact me and say, hey, we've noticed that there's on Yelp, there's a lot of negative reviews of Monex, but they pretty much all relate to, the keeping and the storing. And I'm just telling you, folks, when you put a lot of money in something and it kind of sits there and, they shuffle it around or what have you, I wouldn't recommend they do that. I would recommend, not that I know of any misdealings. I just know that they're solid when it comes to you buying 100 Liberty coins, you get 100 Liberty coins. And these are legitimate 1 ounce silver Liberty coins of any date. Now, if you're looking for their rounds, or if you're looking for their bars and so forth, I would highly recommend their commodities and buying them to hold. If you're looking for a place to actually store your silver, in other words, you want to buy it, but you don't want to take possession of it, you may want to look at what we put up on the website as a repository for your gold and silver. And so on the website, because this came from another friend, ally, Cynthia. And if I go to the Take Action page, that organization is the United Precious Metals Association. What they do is they'll actually, register. They'll take that deposit as a registration, and you'll have 100 ounces of gold. And based on the fluctuation of gold, they will keep that in an account where you have like a debit card. And they will basically deduct, dollar for dollar, based on the fluctuation, what they're holding for you. So in other words, you now have a debit card that is worth $250,000 if you've put that much money into gold. And that's very nice to have. It's kind of like a MasterCard. Contact them. This really seems like a good, viable place to hold it. Most of the places that sell and hold, they probably play shenanigans with their holdings. Just remember that banks, they're acting like banks, and banks usually function and operate with only 20% of their holdings. The government is completely aware of the fact that they do that, which is why they insure those types of things. Now, I don't know if these gold institutions out there have insurance. In other words, if there was a real run and they were only keeping so much, then, it could take a while for them to compensate you. And it could be one of those, tragic things that you can't get it when you need it. Bottom line, take possession of your gold. The whole point of having property is to hold it. If you want somebody else to hold it, I think this UPMA is a great institution to do that, because they actually hold it and they've given you all of that in a debit card, so that debit card is actually accounting for all of your holdings. And you're now holding that in a card in your wallet. So think about that. That's a pretty powerful way of actually holding money. So what you do is you go to Monex, you buy it, and then instead of you receiving it, they actually will receive it for you. They will register it, and they will, boom, give you that. If you already have the card, I believe this is how it'll go down. If you already have the card and you put another deposit in there, those next 100 coins or gold bars, gold, silver bars, whatever, that amount of value will then be attributed to your account. And there you go. Now you have a savings that will, you know, fluctuate, but it'll never go down. It'll never lose value, you know, as a test of time. In other words, one of the things that you can actually look at is how much a silver dollar would buy 50 years ago and how much a silver dollar buys today. It's about the same. It's amazing, because when you look at how many silver dollars it would have taken to buy a Lincoln Continental then and how much silver dollars it would take to buy a Lincoln Continental today, or a loaf of bread, so forth and so on. Because, I mean, bread is, it's gone up dramatically. Bread used to be, you know, 5-10 cents back in the 50s and the 60s. And today, what are you paying? Over $1, $2? You can't tell me that we're not suffering from inflation. And this all has everything to do with the labor controls, the printing of money. There's all sorts of factors that are helping elevate our inflation. This minimum wage, this out of control ramping up of minimum wage, that is one of those things. Now, one of the things, that's one of the things that actually contributes to inflation. So I didn't get a chance today to get into the ideological takeover of our courts regarding the Trump, you know, scenario, what's happening. Nor did I get into the liability of Trump, the liability of the parties and everything else. And so we'll probably, these are the types of things we'll start covering on Monday as things go forward. Because believe me, folks, we've got a lot of time between now and Election Day. And so things are, you know, they may become a little more clear, but I want you to start thinking of who and why is it that people aren't doing what's best? In other words, if you know you're a liability, then why would you continually inject yourself, other than your greed for power, other than your, you know, your avarice to have control? So why is it, this is why people do dirty deeds and they make deals and so forth, so that they can, you know, somehow obtain the impossible dream of becoming the most powerful person in the United States. Folks, we're breaking it down and we're putting it on the line for you, but it'll all be revealed on the presidential stuff on our special presidential episode going into election. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic and we need your help. God bless.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.